It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Please, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, but we should be in the eyes of many people, but we're not. Why aren't we afraid? Because we understand, we know, we realize, we comprehend. I'm going to share a lot of stuff with you guys. Man, it's going to be conspiratorial. We're right in the middle of it, right that middle of it. Well, you know, here we go. I'll just dump right into it. This whole thing, this whole tapestry of America, this matrix, this reality that you have, this whole thing that you have around you is in order to turn you in to a battery for the machine. And you know what? You don't get to control the machine. You just get to feed it. That is the role that you play. You get in your cattle chute, you get slaughtered. Or you do some slaughtering for the rancher, or you allow yourself to be sheared, you know, and you're productive, and you just grow a little bit more wool, and boom, they shear you about every 15 years. Shear you. Doing it right now. They're even setting up the chutes for the next round of shearing. You know, that's what all this, whatever. Now they're doing in the economics. You know, the IMF wants to have a different currency. They're going to convert everything over you. We're so sorry you lost everything. We're going to redo it, and it's better this time. Pinky swear we'll shear you again 15, 20 years. That's what's going on. Big, giant bank robbery. Thanks for playing. How do they do this? How do they get away with this? What is the mechanism by which they are able to accomplish such things? Well, fortunately, they, you know, have to spend a gazillion $1 trillion to turn you into a willing slave. I mean, at least it's not cheap. But that doesn't mean they're not going to spend whatever it takes. But, you know, I'm encouraged by the fact that they have to spend trillions of dollars over decades in order to turn human beings into a battery for the machine. You know, into a source, a fuel cell. You know, this is what's going on. I mean, that's what the movie The Matrix is all about. If you haven't seen The Matrix, I don't care how old you are, you go rent The Matrix, the original one, and you'll get it. The Matrix is government. But there's a cure. Freedom's the answer. What's the question? But you have to understand, they have to bastardize the meaning of that. The left does it. You know, freedom is just another word for health care. Freedom is just another word for I get what I need. I need, I want, whatever. We used to do a skit. We would have, you know, go to gun shows or the state fair or something like that. We were creative. You know, we were poor. A lot of times you couldn't get in to buy the ticket to get the booth, or it was too expensive, or we didn't want to do that anyway. So what we would do, imagine this, I'm sure the same kind of thing happens in your hometown. Veterans Memorial Coliseum is a large, used to be where the Phoenix Suns played until they got the taxpayers to build them their own little stadium. In there, they have an enormous parking lot. It's where the state fair is. They use a lot of the buildings there for all kinds of different things, like gun shows, and the state fair. When they have these, if you go, probably a couple of hours early, which you need to set up anyway, you go a couple of hours early, there's nobody in the parking lot. So you get to go ahead and you pay the state. It doesn't belong to the event. It's just a parking lot. When you get inside the fence or you get inside there, then that's the event. That's what they rent. The parking lot, the government wants to keep, the state. They go, no. We get the revenue on the parking. Heck yeah, man. But that leaves it open to the public, right? It's public parking. Cool. We know that, of course, they change laws and stuff, and Lord knows what it is now. But before the internet, before we could be our own media, before we had radio shows, before we had our own video studio, before we had printing presses and T-shirt making machines and sign production, before all that, what did we have? We just on the street, okay? And we did signs. They were just more expensive and harder and plywood heavy. What we would do is we'd go into the park, we'd pay for two tickets. We'd go, yeah, we want two, three, four tickets. And what? You're one card. Yeah, don't worry about it. Give me the tickets. We would go early so that we could have the choice spots that were right before the entrance. So imagine it's the Arizona State Fair. Every day you go there a couple hours before they open and you find two of the in spots as every single person going to the state fair had to go by you, certainly for, you know, the main entrances there. So we would set up what they'd call the Libertarian Gypsy Booth. Yeah, it's just the Libertarian's Gypsy Booth. I mean, they're the ones that named it. They're the ones that called it that. And we go, yeah, cool. That's what it sounds like. That's pretty much what it is. And we would have signs and stuff up that would say, fully informed jury. You know, re-legalize freedom, register libertarian. Freedom's the answer, what's the question? I mean, all kinds of different stuff. I mean, this is early 90s. I mean, you know, that's why Arizona Wall Street Journal calls us the libertarian state. Didn't happen by accident. There's a bunch of dedicated individuals out there just whipping ass for a long time. So what we would do is we'd set this up, and we have all these things. And, of course, we'd be passing out material and such, you know. And if we had, you know, attractive young women, we'd have them sitting up front holding signs, you know, stop by and say hi, you know, this kind of stuff. I mean, we were creative. But we also did, we would buy all this lumber. You'd go to Home Depot or Lowe's or where it was back then. I think it was Angels or something. You know, there's all these different places you get lumber that they would have the in-cuts. And stuff that would be scrap lumber. You know, people would get what they wanted, have them cut it for them, and then the scrap lumber. And they'd have these big, giant, like 4 or 5 foot high pallets just full of wood. You could buy the entire thing for $5, $10. Here, just get this stuff out of my way. Go burn it for firewood, whatever. Well, we'd go get it, and we'd build little stuff out of it. We built a stage out of a bunch of 2x6s that we get and start making them come. And we had this nice little truss. We had a kit. It fit in the back of a pickup, and we go had this little stage, and it was probably about 4 feet high. And I'd get up there, and we'd do the Carney Barker thing. Step right up, you know, and we'd entertain them and have little skits and so on. One of the skits that was the most popular that we used to do all the time, you'd have someone would get up there and start talking of, you know, stolen values of freedom and why, you know, different initiative petitions that we'd have for unrestricted concealed carry or fully informed jury or doing away with the property tax or creating a citizen's grand jury that you could call a grand jury with enough petition signatures or you get to sell your excess power back to the grid. We had that. No regulation of the internet because we knew that was coming. We already did that. Matter of fact, I got initiative. That's why we get the food tax, because I filed in August of 2002 an initiative sitting there ready to go as soon as they enact a internet tax on transactions in Phoenix. I'm like, go ahead. Oh, they would never do that. I go, yeah, I'm waiting. Go ahead. You know, someday. They're like, dang it. Because we have to do a food tax. Because they know. So we would do all this stuff back then. You know, education things, all kinds of different things that we would do that would be about us just defining what would we do if we were in there doing legislation. Well, one of the things that they would do is state chair Rick Tompkins at the time, later he'd run for president in 96, and for the nomination. And what happened was he'd go, well, you know, freedom this, freedom that, and I'd be in the crowd. And I'd go, and I'm like one of the, once we get a little crowd, you know, you'd have, you know, a couple dozen people kind of stopping by, going in to hear, and, you know, it's the creative stuff. And I'm going, yeah, but I need this. But I need that. But I need. And then he'd answer it. And I go, yeah, but I need this. Well, you'd have to take from this person. You're going to take from them to redistribute that. Wouldn't you be better off if we allow for freedom to be able to get, yeah, but I need. You know, the whole thing is the I need skit. But I need. You know how many times I hear, but I need. Really, you need to rip me off what you need. Is that it? You need somebody with a shiny badge, you know, and a parchment and a piece of paper with a nice little seal on it, and they got the fine hat and always available gun to knock on my door and say, you know what he needs, we're taking from you to do it. Okay. And he needs so much that somehow it makes us virtuous by stealing from you to supply them. Really? So this battle has been going on. We've understood what the battle is for a long time. And this we need thing has been used to do a lot of other stuff, you know, that they don't necessarily need. It's just a pinky swear promise, you know, we're going to give you because you need. And then they create the need. You know, a lot of times they don't even need. I remember in the 60s, one of the quotes from LBJ, he goes to corporations and he says, you're going to be liberal because you can afford to be. What happens when you can't afford to be? What happens when we get to the point now? Is it a principal thing start coming up? Hello, how did we get here? Well, we're here. What are we going to do about it? There's a lot of things happening. Listen to the show all day today. When I feel like it, I'll get to it. Tell you what's going on.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Yeah, you're in here too. Lunatic fringe, I know you're out there. Who's the lunatic fringe? They're obviously not buying into whatever heck it is they want you to be buying into because you're not buying it. You know, this is typical. This is, you know, you're crazy. You know, yesterday we had Heidi Byrick from Southern Poverty Law Center, and I go, well, how do you get on the list? It's like the third time I've talked to her. And I'm like, you know, Heidi, come on, man. I'm not on your list. I went to Jekyll Island. You know, the Federal Reserve, you know, Bob Schultz's thing. I mean, that didn't qualify me. Heck, so you even had in your article that you wrote yesterday, Midwife in the Militias, how I was in support of, you know, a friend of mine that was part of the Viper Militia in Arizona, which they made up a bunch of stuff. It was Napolitano, by the way, that was prosecuting attorney on that. So, yeah, we go way back. And I go, that doesn't do it. I go, I'm part of the revolution against the man. Heck, I didn't go to Continental Congress because they didn't have the option of voting none. Heck, I want none. That doesn't make me radical enough. You know, what do I got freaking do? She's like, no, Ernie, well, conspiracies. I go, 9-11. 9-11, 9-11, 9-11, 9-11. I don't believe that 9-11 is what they said it was, 9-11. Well, Ernie, you can't make it on our list if you wanted to, no matter what, because we know you want to be on there. Seriously, that's what she said. You're not going to make it. There's nothing I can do. Wow, man, how rigged is this game? So I'm like, all right, cool. You know, you want to play hardball? You know, I got to be all crazy and do something that will be really put me on. Is that really my goal? My goal is not to be on the bad guy's list. You know, it just happens that way. You know, it's not, I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way. So... this is kind of what got me in the mood, other than too much Starbucks, is that we have, and that's one thing, I tell you, you know, everybody's, you know, Ernie's, because I need to get work done. We're behind on stuff. I got stuff to do. Got all this stuff that we're dealing with. Man, the world's coming down, and I got 15 gazillion things I got to do. I got to manage a bunch of people. Got to rock and roll. Where is my caffeine? And they put something extra in Starbucks. You know what they started doing now? They go, do you want that, I don't know, regular or espresso, uber bold amp up? Extra. And I'm, you know, I tried the extra a few days and nah, we got to amp this thing down. I mean, dang, you know, but hey, you know, we got to get stuff done. Tomorrow I leave to go to Missouri, state convention of the Libertarian Party. And it's part of the, you know, run for national chair and all this. And that's where the national convention is going to be at Memorial weekend at the end of May. And so we'll see what happens there. But I mean, the dogs of war are unleashed against me for, you know, coming ahead in this libertarian national state leadership conference of all the state chairs and so on in Austin. And they're just, oh, heck no. And I'm starting to realize why and find out what's going on. But it's a continuation of something. You don't have to be all conspiratorial to see, you know, the freaking dots getting connected. I mean, how hard is this? Let me go ahead and lay it out for you. I don't know if I can do a word picture here, but so you can get a chronology of what's going on. This morning on the morning show, we had a gentleman on. His name is Hank Alberelli. Mr. Alberelli wrote a book And it was about the CIA, and it's called A Terrible Mistake, The Murder of Frank Olson and the CIA's Secret Cold War Experiments. It was a very interesting conversation. And in fact, I thought he was booked for this show, and he called in the morning show. I had to rearrange, so I had another gentleman on about Unity. Unity is a program for allowing apprenticeships for young people as opposed to, I don't know, public school system or jail, or as if there were two different things, but wanted to offer them an opportunity to be educated. They're coming to Phoenix. Now, here they come. Now, they're coming to Phoenix, or they're working with a lot of the local businesses. We're offering apprenticeship programs, and we're going to help them promote it. It is a free market, free solution to this. It has nothing to do with government. It's just people unifying to work with the churches and nonprofits and businesses and just get it. It's purposely avoiding government inclusion in this thing, because then it's all, then you start getting the unions involved. Oh, it's a threat. How did you get your permit? You know, how did you, you can't go into the schools without, you know, having permission of them, blah, blah, blah. He gave me all these stories, you know, the things that happened. I met with him when I was in Austin, and he was at the invitation of Louisiana State Party that had been working with him, and I'm like, I am all in, man. Bring it. Let's do it. Waiting on you now. And that's just a perfect cause here for Freedom's Phoenix, that we can promote this kind of freedom-oriented thing. So I'm, let's do it. Let's do it. Okay, done. Before that, we had Hank Alberelli about his book about the CIA. Now, who Frank Olson was, back in 1953, they started doing a lot of this Cold War experimentation. You remember the movie, you know, Frank Sinatra. He was a head in this movie. He was a star of the movie, The Manchurian Candidate. Remember that? And then they did a remake with, I think, Denzel Washington. And this has been a thing with a lot of people. Look, man, it's the mind alteration. It's all about brainwashing. It's all, you know, this has been going on for a long time. Well, the United States, you know, they take their stuff from, I don't know, they made it up their cells to get all the pharmaceutical guys that were doing it from during the Nazi regime. This is, you know, hell, they're the ones that started doing the fluoridation in water. You know, this whole thing is to what? It's to turn a human being into a battery for the machine. They have not been able to accomplish in decades. I mean, that's where my optimism comes from. The human spirit's an amazing thing. You know, it's even more amazing when it doesn't have all these chemicals, you know, sitting on top of it like a backpack with rocks. So how do they do it? Now, it's just a little tweak in here, a little tweak in there, a little add this to the food supply, a little, you know, whatever, you know, just, you know, because we can. You think they don't do it? All right. Well, that's what his book is about. You've heard of it called MK Ultra, and there was a bunch of others that Project whatever and this and that, doesn't matter. Olson was one of the scientists, and all of a sudden one day he decides he's going to take a flying leap from a hotel room. You know, it just so happens that one of the CIA's assassins happened to be a bellboy that day working at the hotel, you know, and it's just, you know, it's all this stuff. It's just, you know, okay, why would this be such a big deal? Because back then, what they were doing is they were trying to be able, you know, truth serums, be able to get assassins produced at it, like the Bourne Supremacy, all the Bourne series of movies. And Matt Damon, you know, that's what they were trying to do, create people that would take their ethics and take their empathy and set it to the side or chemically remove it so they can turn them into killers. If you read books about the First and Second World War, I remember reading a lot of this about the Second World War, there was only a small percentage of the, I mean, literally under 20%. Of the people, they go into war, they get through the beach, they shot at, bombed at, get into the foxhole, they come up, and then there's a German in their sights and everything, and they purposely aim high. They didn't shoot to kill. A lot of them didn't even shoot their firearms. It was so rampant and such a problem that they go, there's something wrong with our soldiers. Well, there wasn't anything wrong with them. There was everything right with them. They didn't want to kill people. You think I'm kidding? During the break, I'll look it up. Man, put it up here. You know, percentage of killers. Now remind me and I'll look it up. Because what they had to overcome in the training is they do. That's why you have their boot camp for Marines and they kill, 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 kill. Video games do that. Yeehaw! Can't have naked women, but man, we can have blood splattering all over the windshield in a horror movie for these teenagers to go watch. We could have, you know, man, as long as we associate the sex with the violence, and as Freddy Krueger's killing people and Jason from Halloween is putting a spear through two love-making teenagers at camp, whatever, you know, as long as you can do that, you can show it. Take the disembowelment and the blood splattering on the screen out. No, that's NC-17. Why? There's a reason. It's to change you into a killer. They need you to kill for the Empire, or at least be desensitized to it when others do it. Humanity will march on.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Here on Declare Your Independence, me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Let's see, it's what, training soldiers, kill, it's talking about, but doesn't give a percentage. This is it, and I'll find it here in a little bit. I was busy doing something else, but it was books done on this is the big deal. They got to have a problem. You can't send all these young guys to go out there and not killing. Dang, I mean, we need a video game for that. Now you got to train these guys, kill, 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 kill. Well, are we better off? And then when they come back, then what? You know, I remember it was a Star Trek episode with the Next Generation one with Data, and they had a group of people, a planet that had been at war, and then the war's over, okay? Then they have all these soldiers that they enhanced, and they made killing machines, and they did, and it was a testament to this. They had to get people to that would be able and willing to kill and be trained to kill and want to kill and just go kill, be Klingons, all right? These guys go out, they kill, 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 kill. They come back, and they can't integrate into society. So they put them on a moon thing. Oh, yeah, you go be over here, man. We cannot, you know, thanks for saving our world, but, man, we just can't associate with you because, damn. You know, you're just not being able to integrate into the society. So, of course, you know, then there's like a civil war going on and Picard saves a day or something. I don't even remember. But the one thing that I do remember is that it reminded me of this research that was done. I had done a show on it before years ago about the training that I had an author on or something. And I can't remember the name of the book, but it was the training that has to go into making a soldier that will go out and do this kind of work. Kill. You have to make the other guy bad. You have to dehumanize him. You have to give him some kind of slang. You know, nip, jap, slope, you know, gook, whatever the heck you got to call him to make him, towel head, whatever you got to do to go, they're not human anymore. I just go kill them, bomb them, you know, take out the wedding party. All right? As they do this, it becomes, we have these guys that have to integrate back into society. And the training of an entire population with video games and what movies that they promote and this and that and so on. You know, that's one thing that really bothers me. I'm going to make a big, I keep talking about this and I never do it. One of these days I'm going to make a big campaign out of this. I just want the information before I go to see a movie of what the previews and trailers are going to be. Lord forbid you go see an R-rated movie, an action flick, or something like that. You have to sit through at least 10 minutes of probably 20 minutes worth of previews. Half of them are horror flicks of the most egregious parts of the movie. I mean, I don't even have to go see the movie, man. I'm traumatized just from watching the trailer. You know, it's 2 minutes of blood and gore and slashing and fear and kind of like, whoa, 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 freaking whoa, man. And I'm supposed to be thinking that that's not like that's pornography, like a naked bodies having sex or something is worse than that. I'm going, whoa, where's the, I mean, other countries aren't like that. I mean, you go to some European countries, you know, like France or Brazil or something, heck, you know, daytime soaps are getting all nasty. You know, but that's parents' job. You know, take care of business with your kids. But my thing is that I'm not condoning whether they're all naked flesh writhing on your screen all the time or not, whether you should be subjected to that or not. That's not my point. My point is that violence and mayhem and spurting blood is okay. But that's not. Where's the standard? Where's the criteria? Where did that come into our cult? Why is that? There was a movie rating. There was a movie done on the movie ratings. It was called "This Movie Is Not Yet Rated." It was a expose and a documentary of filmmakers that were making the point that you had these people that would determine what was and was not R or NC-17 or whatever. Who is this group? Well, it came out of, you know, some the socialist and communist taking over Hollywood, and Hollywood saying, no, we're not, and we're going to, you know, review movies, and we'll censor ourselves and everything because we don't want the government to do it, and heck, we're as powerful as the government anyway. We're Hollywood, and we're going to do whatever, and you can't, and we'll take care of it. There are, oh man, I can go do a whole show just on this whole effort, but the bottom line is this. Movies that get supported, movies that have, get the right rating, movies that they are supported with the PG-13 rating. If you hit R, you know, you got, okay, R, sometimes you got an audience, you got to have an R-rated movie, and that'd be all right, but man, do you get the NC-17? And you'll look at the movies that they were comparing, and they'll say, this is the scene that gave us an NC-17 that we had to cut out compared to these movies over here. What is the standard that is used? What is the social? What? How do they make these decisions? It's political. Okay. I could see a trend. Violence was okay. Sexuality was not. I see violence much more damaging than sex. I mean, seriously. But they would say you could get the sex in there for the teenagers or the horror films and everything as long as there were negative repercussions for having premarital, sex. You have, you know, some monster get you. I mean, this is the subliminal message. Okay. You know, if it's just enjoyable and everybody's happy and it's kind of deal and nobody got pregnant and it's all fine and things are flowers and roses and it's peace and Woodstock, heck no. All right. Whether you agree with that or not, it's not the point. What is the message? Violence acceptable, sexuality not. Why? The CIA guy, he came up with, you know, we talked about this and we brought this up. And he's going, you're absolutely right. You know, there is a message, there's a theme, there's a support, there's a brainwash, there is a line of thinking that they need the American people to beat in order to forward their agenda. And I'm like, okay, so interesting book. You know, it's, the CIA has gone wild. And what they call the book, it's H.P. Alberelli, A Terrible Mistake. That's the name of the book. A Terrible Mistake, The Murder of Frank Olson and the CIA's Secret Cold War Experiments. And I'll get them on the afternoon show here next week sometime. But in this, it's just to show who is doing it and covering this up. Years later, people would be like, you know, we need it. There's this MK Ultra thing. Well, it starts coming out in 1975. 1975, it's on page 17 of the C section of the, you know, Washington Post or whatever. I mean, it wasn't like it was on the internet. They're not talking about it every day on the evening news. You know, they're going on about, you know, all this kind of unimportant stuff. So how do people know? What comes out in a Rockefeller, you know, kind of report on blah, 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 blah? Well, what happens is a lot of people don't know that Rockefeller, he was, which Rockefeller was it? I can't, well, it was one of the Rockefellers, I was saying. He was vice president. And before that, he was secretary of health and human services. Okay, what was it? It was HEW, health, economics, and welfare. Okay, employment and welfare. And now they call it health and social services. It's HSS, I think it is. But back then, it was, you know, housing or health. It was health, education, and welfare. That's what it was, HEW. So health, education, and welfare, for the health, education, and welfare of people, they had people that would go and get drug treatment for addictions, you know, a lot of celebrities, rock stars, that kind of stuff, you know, in the 50s, 60s. So they have this site going, yeah, I'm here to get treatment. It's all good. And they're doing experiments on them. And if they couldn't get them to voluntarily do it, like, oh, we'll take this experiment. We're doing, okay, I'll tell you what, we'll give you free heroin. You know, as part of your treatment to this. Now go, okay, hey, to a heroin addict? All right, cool, deal. This is the kind of, at the same time, what are they doing to soldiers? They're doing the same thing. You know, the Tuskegee experiments, so they're, you know, giving syphilis, you know, to black soldiers and just letting it run its course and them suffering and doing, what are they, Nazis? Of course, same thing. They're irradiating soldiers to put them out in the blast area. They're doing, I mean, this is the mentality for the common good. What is the proper role of government? Defense of individual rights. What are they doing? They're violating individual rights in the name of whatever the heck it is they say. Wow, 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 wow. So this starts coming out in the mid-70s. Well, of course, it's in some report, and there's conspiracy, whatever, and this guy doing the JFK assassination book, or this guy writing this thing, or this guy, and any kind of, you know, that gets faxed around, you know, when they started getting faxes, and guys go to little Patriot meetings and everything in the early 90s, and they talk about and talk about and talk about, look, this report's not a secret. They did this and this report, and they get okay, and yeah, they cleaned themselves up and said, yeah, we did, but we're good now. We don't do this anymore. You know, of course they are. Everything that we got now is just a continuation of this kind of crap. And what is it? It is a mindset of changing your humanity, your Judeo-Christian ethic, or whatever our society has been, you know, like, you know, the golden rule. Thou shalt do no harm. The non-aggression principle. The, don't be a bad guy. This kind of stuff is changing us for what? What's coming? What are they doing? And what are they doing recently? We'll talk more about when we come back. I'm just rambling. And we'll give out the number, too. You can call in with your stuff. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Change the world. How are we going to do that? You know, the biggest thing is, can we just remain being, you know, human? I just want to be human. Let's be human. What the heck? Let's do that. Well, I found one of the books about this. It's this historynet.com. They have a book, Men Against Fire. How many soldiers actually fired their weapons at the enemy during the Vietnam War? Now, this is Vietnam. This is after they already started, you know, really seeing that this was a problem. You know, they're trying to, you know, get this taken care of. In a squad of 10 men, on average, fewer than three ever fired their weapons in combat, day in and day out. It did not matter how long they'd been soldiers, how many months of combat they had seen, or even that the enemy was about to overrun their position. This was what the highly regarded Brigadier General Samuel Lyman Atwood Marshall, better known as SLA Marshall or SLAM, concluded in a series of military journal articles and in his book, Men Against Fire, about America's World War II soldiers. Marshall had been assigned as a military analyst for the U.S. Army in both the Pacific and Europe. The American, he concluded, comes from a civilization in which aggression connected with the taking of life is prohibited and unacceptable. The fear of aggression has been expressed to him so strongly, absorbed by him so deeply and pervadingly, practically with his mother's milk, that it is sort of the normal man's emotional makeup. This is his great handicap when he enters combat. It stays his trigger finger, even though he is hardly conscious that it is a restraint upon him. Then they went into percentages and so on, and it doesn't matter. The thing is, they had to change us as human beings. They had to change us to make us killers. Certainly in a prosperous country like America, I mean, we're not Klingons. You know, we're not Spartans. We weren't brought up, you know, we're looking for a war to fight and somebody to kill. I mean, yeah, maybe the British Empire is saying you got to go be glory. If you don't come back with a limb missing, you can't be a lord or something, or a duke or whatever. I mean, this is, we were a different mentality. You know, peace, love, truth, justice, American way, which is love, 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 love. Love has been beaten out of us. Love is like you're weak if you love. Love is almost an embarrassment. That's one thing that Mr. Arborelli today in his book on the CIA, that they have done everything they could to make love an embarrassment when associated with men. Now, I don't need you to go crying, you know. I don't need you to be, show you my feminine side, you know. But this is, you know, they got to be that. And then they do all this other stuff, too. You know, the board op he's talking about, film critics have coined the term torture porn over the last few years because of the films that you're talking about. In the 2000s, there has been a resurgence of films influenced by the splatter genre that depict nudity, torture, mutilation, and sadism, sometimes disparagingly. Neutrality is disputed, labeled torture porn by critics and detractors. And then it goes on and on talking about, you know, certain films. This is what I'm talking about. I'm not the only one to notice this. You know, I mean, I noticed it. I mean, I got four kids. And I go, oh, we're going to go see, you know, torture slasher, you know, Hostel, which is about kids that go to Europe and they stay in these hostels. And I know friends, you know, they've stayed in hostels. They think it's cool. And they're young, you're in your 20s. You got a bunch of other guys living cheap, even if they have the money or not. It's cool. It's fun. Meet new people. Hostels. So they go, yeah, they're tripping in Europe, and all of a sudden they go and they take the kids from the hostels and go and torture them and sell them to people to, you know, torture them for money and make them because they can. And it's all about this one kid gets away and all nasty. I mean, I didn't watch it. I'm get it from the trailer. Heck, I felt violated just watching the trailer. Saw 1 through 47 or whatever. You know, I'm, wow, seriously? And there's a market for these. They've built the market. It gets bigger. I am, wow. This is a serious, real thing going on, and it happens over generations. What is the biggest threat? The biggest threat to the military-industrial New World Order empire we rule you of, central banking, whatever, the biggest threat is peace and love and tranquility. Can't have that love thing. No. Need war. There's always somebody to get us war. I've stepped into the middle of this thing without even really realizing. I mean, I understood. There's, you know, I'm like a lot of people. I'm just, the only difference between me and other people is that I've been, you know, just a certain drive for just, we know the truth. I just want to know the truth. Just quit BSing me. Just tell me the truth. I mean, it's really obvious. If you're looking for, if you're not trying to be part of a group or a collective, if you're not trying to be head of whatever, if you're not trying to influence, if you just want to know the truth, you know, can I get some of the truth, please? That's why initially in February of 2003, after I had sold my restaurant, there were some wealthy libertarians that are now passing, the husband has passed away, and they are great people. And they don't like their name being said, even though he's passed on. These are the kind of people that they're not about it for them. I know a lot of people that are, and these people aren't. And it reminds me, I saw on Facebook there, a gentleman sent me a thing I thought was really cool. He did a YouTube of him going to visit Murray Rothbard's grave. Now, Murray Rothbard, big economist, libertarian, freedom guy. He died in the mid-90s, and he was, a god to a lot of guys. I mean, he was, you know, no compromises, go whip ass. I get compared to him a lot. You know, you're just Rothbard. And like, the more I read about this guy and understand, I'm like, that's like a bad thing. I mean, because they say in it, with a kind of a demeaning tone. Ah, oh, you're just one of those Rothbardians. I mean, who is this Rothbard guy? So, you know, I used to, I go look, I'm going, yeah. So this young man, he's probably in the early 20s. He does a YouTube of him going to visit Rothbard's grave. And he wants to raise, everybody just give $10. We got to get a better marker for him. Because it's a nice marker. It's just, you know, Murray Rothbard here next to his wife. It's just one of those in the grass. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's broken or anything. I mean, it's nice enough. It's probably, you know, a foot high by 2 feet wide, and it's in the grass. You can mow over it. It's not a big deal. But he's like, this is not, you know, we need something better than this. Well, maybe he doesn't want it. I've known people like him. They, you know, I don't need a monument. Heck, you know, my whole thing is I want to be cremated. That's right. Put my ashes in about, you know, a couple hundred of these little vials, and you give them to all my friends and everybody. And when something really cool happens, you break it open. Ernie was here. You know, just kind of put it in the salad. You know, something like that. I don't care. You know, this is, you know, if you're not making your monument, your life is your monument, then, you know, what's the big giant monument? Sure as heck ain't going to do you any good. You're dead. I mean, it's, you know, you're on somewhere else, man. You know, so I sent him an email this morning. I go, you know, why don't we just go there and have a party? You know, he lit up a cigar while he was there. You know, here's the freedom, man. I go, yeah, I think we'd all go, you know, light a cigar. Let's go have a party. Now, he'd appreciate a party. You know, I want to help with the party. You know, if a lot of people want to do a monument thing, that's cool. You know, I'm not saying don't. I'm just, you know, I think he'd appreciate a party. So maybe we'll help with that. When I started doing this, you know, it was the same kind of people that just wanted the word to get out, just wanted to share the love, just wanted to know the truth. Not an agenda, not to get elected, not to, you know, rule over somebody. That's never been my intent. If that was, I would have done something other than be libertarian. But I knew that libertarianism was common. It was common, the love. So here comes Dr. Paul, former libertarian candidate for president in 88. I knew he wasn't going to back away from it. I knew what the message was. I knew it was going to be very popular. I knew I wanted to play. The love. Man, did that muck up their stuff. Oh, heck no. You know, think about it. You know, the other, you know, 10 candidates standing up there for Republican, they couldn't kill enough. You know, how many wars are we going to? We got to go whip ass. Islamofascism. Rudy Giuliani got paid, must have been $100,000 every time he said Islamofascism. So I'm going, you know, this is there's something else going on. Are they really pandering to the desires and needs of the people? Is this what they want? Yeah, let's go kill. So they'll be on the news thing. Yeah, this is what everybody wants. Everybody wants to go kill somebody. Do you know how low the percentage is of people that actually go out and vote? Think about this. I mean, the last time I checked, I know my lawsuits on election law and all this kind of stuff. Everybody's marketing to the voters. And I'm marketing to everybody. You, the people that don't vote, you know, people, you know, too young, too old, felons, whatever. I don't care. You know, this market, this free market out there, the black market, the free market, the controlled market, the people just spending every dollar that they take out of their wallet, that's voting. So I'm going, all right, so let's take a look at it. Like here in Arizona, the numbers were something. Oh, dang it. This is a really good part. You know, it's a good part. I give you some numbers of what actually is driving all of this attention towards people that to get them to vote. What are the numbers really? What are they? Who are they talking to? You know, is it, you know, out of 300 million, is it 250 million? Is it 200 million? Is it 100 million? Is it 20? I mean, you know, what is it? Does the computers even allow it to even matter? This is a battle for our souls. This is a battle for our humanity. Humanity marches on. We are not going to be contained by this stuff. Love that neighbor. And I'll do what I can to help. I'll be right back.